The Conversation Hour with John Fain on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
My co-host today from the Wheeler Centre for Books, Writing and Ideas, Michael Williams, is here to co-host on The Conversation Hour. Our guests include Mike and Mel from Circus Oz and Santo from SBS, Santo Chilaro, who's going to be part of the Cup Fever at SBS Television for the Soccer World Cup, and Mike Finch and Mel Fife from Circus Oz, who have a new season under the big top at Birrarung Mar on the riverbank in Melbourne. Michael Williams, welcome back to The Conversation Hour.
Morning, John.
How's the Wheeler Centre?
The Wheeler Centre's going
along?
Very well. All the inevitable wheel and rolling puns. As long as you don't ask if it's wheelie good, I think we can get past it and we can keep moving.
You've heard them all, I'm sure.
Definitely. Apart from anything else, very early on we were being sold as a literary hub, so it seemed appropriate that we were at the centre of a wheel.
And you're the spokesman?
Where I am the spokesman. Oh, John, that's fantastic.
Had that one before?
That's a good dadsy pun. I'm very happy to have that. I'll just put that on the list and I'll be using that myself, and I'll credit you every time I do.
Thank you.
But it's going well. It's really a lot of fun, and part of the fun is kind of working out the different types of events that you can put on and what works and what doesn't. When I leave here today, I go back to Julian Burnside getting on his soapbox about the degradation of public language.
And Burnside's doing that, is he?
He's doing that for us.
Burnside QC.
I know. We were delighted that we have this regular series, which is the Lunchbox Soapbox on a Thursday.
The Lunchbox Soapbox. Okay, that's a good one.
The idea behind it is it only goes for 20 minutes. And the idea is if you're on your lunch break from work in the city, or you've got some time on your hands in the middle of the day, you don't want a whole...
to come into town.
Yeah, you don't want an hour-long lecture then. You know, you've only got a certain amount of time to give over. But a 20-minute, you could sit at your desk and eat a sandwich there and surf the web. Or you could come down to the Wheeler Centre, bring your lunch with you, sit and eat it on your lap while you're watching, and hear some of our terrific writers get up and get on their soapbox about something that really gets up their nose. And it's a lot of fun. So we've had a whole range of voices in the last 3 months doing that, from Peter Singer to George Megalogenis to Catherine Devaney, and Julian Burnside QC today, which will be fun.
Come along typically?
It really varies. Anywhere between kind of 50 and 250, depending on the week, depending on the weather.
Depending on the talent.
And then we film them all and make them freely available on the website. So Casey Bonetto was in last week talking about the tyranny of the blank page to the creative process and what it does to you. And
it's a good excuse for not having prepared something.
Casey managed to carry it off with absolute flair. I'm convinced that the preparation was there.
Casey's full of flair. He's a gem.
He is doing the Threepenny Opera at the moment. So he was bald-headed and magnificent for us last week, which was good to see. But but the soapbox thing's really interesting because writers and pretty much everyone responds to it. The idea that you get a bee in your bonnet and you want a chance to sound off on it properly. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing for me in programming at a place like the Wheeler Centre is working out the different ways to get those ideas across. You know, if people are interested in the state of reviewing or criticism, then is a panel discussion the best way to do it? Is it a lecture? Is it how do you kind of fit this thing together?
And there's a couple of kind of tried and tested, almost cliche ways of doing it, and I think people are sick of those. I mean, the idea that someone just gets up and drones out a speech, I think, is pretty old hat, and people nod off and get annoyed with that.
I think so. I don't think anyone wants to be talked at.
Yeah.
But the idea that I had kind of dismissed as being old hat and a bit kind of done and incapable of drilling deep enough into a topic is the debate. It's years since I'd seen a kind of really good debate, and too often I think debates now are reduced to kind of comedy attempts. There's a chance for six people to get up and do some stand-up on the topic.
Well, sometimes that's appropriate, but if you want to exchange ideas, then yeah, debate can be very good, but it's got to be properly moderated, I find.
And we did a thing a few months ago. We partnered with an organisation called Intelligence Squared, who have been doing it in Sydney for a while, where they go the classic Oxford rules debating, where on your way into the venue you're asked what your opinion is, so that's tallied up and there are scrutineers and it's all very kind of rigidly run, and you hear proper carefully constructed arguments from both sides. And the first one we did was on the nuclear question in Australia, whether Australia should embrace nuclear power, and the town hall was full and it was heated, but it was also very respectful. You know, audience question time, the audience can get a bit stroppy if someone goes a bit long or at this. After every audience question or statement, there was applause, there was respect for each other. It was quite thrilling to be part of something that had a set of rules, like a sporting match.
Well, it's essentially democratic, isn't it?
Yeah, and there was something really exhilarating about being part of that. So we've got a second one of those coming up, and it's on race, which you've talked about a lot on this
What aspects
on this
of
program.
Race? What's
the topic is Australia has not escaped its racist past. So it takes
there's
in
an implication there. That it
well,
has
there
a
is an implication
past.
There from the start, and so
this is,
I imagine
sorry, this
many
is the
of the debater
people, in me coming
no,
out
no, straight away.
Away.
The argument, for the
challenge the
affirmative
assumption in the question
is going to assume that Australia has a racist past. I imagine we'll be looking at things like the White Australia policy. You know, things like that will be brought into evidence.
Oh, and the before that, the treatment of the Indigenous people upon arrival by white settlers.
Before, during, and after, sadly, for that one. But the debate, the nice thing about it is having a debate that doesn't set up a straw man. I think anyone who lives in Melbourne at the moment can see what a charged and what a kind of relevant issue this is. And so the people who are speaking include, you know, Gautam Gupta is speaking for the affirmative. He's arguing very strongly. Your listeners may know him from the Federation of Indian Students of Australia, and I know you've spoken to him a number of times. But then arguing against are people like Tanvir Ahmed, the Sydney Morning Herald columnist, an Age columnist, who's terrific. You know, Robert Mann's involved. And the best part about this is it's a chance to actually hear reasoned argument, not just sound bites, not just... I'm kind of weirdly excited about debate, John. I think it's a good thing.
Undoubtedly. And the prospect of people exchanging ideas is a very healthy one rather than just yelling at each other. But when I'm in the audience at some of these things, I crave the interactivity. And when you watch Jenny Brockie on SBS does an excellent program in a roundtable environment, and of course Q&A on ABC TV with Tony Jones, which is a bit different because the audience just ask all the questions and you've often got five people on a panel. Sometimes that's too many. They don't get enough time to expand on an idea. But anything that involves the exchange of ideas and having some of your own prejudices challenged is very, very worthwhile.
The thing we found with the nuclear debate was going in, two-thirds of the audience were undecided. They weren't quite sure where they stood on it.
That's why they came along.
A lot of people who'd been conventionally anti-nuclear who recognised that with the current climate challenges, a new solution might be necessary, looking to be persuaded. And at the end of it, more than two-thirds of the audience were against the idea of nuclear. There was a clear winner, a clear argument that won out. And the thing that kind of made it work that I hope we see in the race one is that question of respect, for the other people's argument, respect for kind of good discussion.
And the Melbourne Writers' Festival coming up later in the year, which you're also all involved in, so we can look forward to the full program.
That's all part of Literary Melbourne.
Michael Williams, Head of Programming at the Wheeler Centre for Books, Writing and Ideas. Santo Chilaro joining us as our first guest, talking about SBS, the Soccer World Cup and Cup Fever, which he is part of. And then Mike and Mel from Circus Oz joining us as well on the Conversation Hour today.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Michael Williams from the Wheeler Centre's our co-host, and our first guest is a guy who, well, it's a bit like a kid being let loose in the lolly shop. Santo Chilaro from Working Dog has been hired by SBS to do commentary of a different kind throughout the Soccer World Cup. Good morning to you, Santo.
Hello, John. Hello, Michael.
And you're getting paid as well?
Well, this is SBS, so we haven't worked that out yet. But it's good that I'm on SBS because now I've figured out there's a fair chance that my parents might actually get to see a show that I've actually done.
Yeah.
So is this part of your plan for complete domination of Australian TV? This is the last network? All of them now, the last network?
Ah, it's all falling into place. Yeah, we sit around and hope we can take over the whole joint. No, I've always wanted to work on SBS. In fact, I've pitched this very idea to SBS, doing a comedy show about the World Cup since 1997, I believe. But I've always got distracted by the fact that I've actually gone to the World Cup and I've forgotten to tell them until 2 weeks before I've left. Oops, I'm going to be over there, so I'm afraid I can't do the show here. But
what's the brief? Because I remember listening to Punter to Punter taking off grand finals on Triple R.
I remember too.
And HG and Roy doing the same on Triple J. There's a long tradition then of people also for the Olympics of... gently sort of, you know, taking the mickey. Is that the idea here for the World Cup?
I don't know. We haven't done it yet, John. So it's a live show. And all I know is that Ed Cavalier, Sam Pang and myself love football. We especially love a World Cup and jumping out of our skins for it to start. And we just want to see what happens overnight talk about it like we would talk about it if we didn't have cameras around us.
Laugh so if you were just sitting around with a drink or a barbecue and have those sort of
endless speculative conversations. But we are at a television station, so all we've said to SBS is we just reserve the right to be silly at short notice. So if something happens overnight and we want to recreate something during the day, well, we'll give it a go and pull the handy cam out and do something, or possibly speak to a guest who may have some interesting observations about it. But otherwise, it's a bit of a trust exercise. It feels a little bit like when we started doing The Late Show, when we started doing The Panel. We weren't quite sure what the show was or how it would evolve, but we just trusted that, here's an idea, us talking about this, and they're the parameters, really.
So. That's interesting, though, because with those other two examples, it was a trust exercise where you surrounded yourself with people you'd done similar things or parallel things with in the past. Mm. This is a pretty new team you're putting together.
No, but what you don't know, Michael, is that we speak very frequently about World Cup, probably a bit too frequently that people would like to know. We do love it, and especially Ed Cavalli. I think the hardest job in this show is to actually stop him from talking statistics. I promise we will be red carding him on a 5-minute basis. We do love the game.
Is he your moist-eyed Bruce McAvaney stand-in?
The stats. I've got a feeling that there might be a few shears, Ted.
That was good. I like that. Cricket stats are worse than soccer stats, aren't they?
I think so. I believe, but yeah. Ed knows those as well. I think.
Does he?
I'm not bad on cricket stats either. I love my cricket. I love my footy. I love my soccer.
So this is going to be a franchise.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
See you're like Jim's mowing. You're already planning the other things that you're going to do.
Wait for the ashes to start.
Does that make it hard, though? It's one of those topics about which people are really obsessive and kind of a bit scary in their obsession. I mean, you've got the word fever in your name. It inspires that kind of attitude. Right. Are you worried about those fans who are going to just pick you up on every little thing that you get wrong?
I'm never scared. And we're so obsessed. Not only is it cup fever, it's got an exclamation mark at the end.
I
think that's the
that.
First time we've used an exclamation mark on anything. I'm happy to be picked up on my mistakes.
I think half the SBS budget went on that exclamation mark. I've had it in a cupboard for years waiting for a use.
I bring it on. I'd like to take people up on it. In fact, we put the feelers out. We wanted people to be in a World Cup spelling bee for the show. And we're filming that tomorrow somewhere. And we've got some great, people's subjects.
Zinedine Zidane.
Oh, it's like, referees from 1994 to 2002. It's got the most outrageous, stadiums between 1966 and 1978. So
mascots, songs. I can just imagine
rejected mascots. No, we've got there's going to be a lot of people out there who are going to be mad about the football, but I hope that the people who watch this show aren't just the footy-crazed people.
And underpinning it all is a solid understanding of the reality of the game and the competition that's underway, I suppose.
I think it's important because
it's got to be authentic, doesn't it?
I do. I'd hate it for people go, you're hanging in on the sport, or, you're just being sarcastic about the players or whatever. No, we love the sport. And, we got the Socceroos to do a few things for us before they left. And
is that why Harry Kuehl's injured?
Yeah, so unfortunately, yeah.
A hilarious sketch.
His groin never recovered after what we did with him. We had to tell them we're not taking the mickey out of anybody. And I think that what happens, especially if you're a football player in this country and have played overseas, particularly in Britain, you sort of think that whoever's in that dark media group of people are out there to bring you down.
And, Les Murray's got a terrible reputation for that, just dreadful. Bringing people down.
Oh, yeah.
Negative,
the Hungarian steamroller, they call him.
Notorious. So if Ed brings to the table his love and passion of statistics, Sam Pang, fresh from Eurovision, and you're saying you're not going to be just solely sarcastic, what else does that leave Sam?
I reckon Sam's got this great, how do you call it, third man in kind of thing. He sort of lingers around. He's on the edges and the fringes of the pack. And when the ball spills out, he'll do something mercurial with it. I think that he's just got a great attitude towards stuff. And it's great that he's been to Eurovision because Germany's just won, and he thinks that Germany are after the famous Eurovision World Cup double, which has never been achieved before, I believe. Well, Slovakia have been hoping to do it, but I don't know where they're going to get close. But Sam brings niceness to the show.
Oh!
I'm a massive fan and former colleague of Sam's, mm-hmm. and I say this with love.
You just can't bury your hatchets in someone else's.
No, I say this with love, but niceness is not something that man's ever been accused of.
Oh, no, I mean on air. I mean, we know what he's like off air. No one can stand him. But look,
I can't help but notice that even though it's counter-alphabetical, Santo, your name is up the top of the title. You're the headline.
It's on Santo's broadcasting service.
I insisted, yes. Oh, I think SBS were asking, what are Ed Cavalier's qualifications? Does he have any ethnicity in him at all? And I think we may have pulled a few long bows on that one. I think we told him Cavalier. I don't know. Is it some kind of Scottish, Thai kind of...
Isn't Eduardo? It mean rabbit Eduardo, in yeah. something?
In fact, I think we did something on SBS the other day on Les Murray's The World Game. And he was introduced... I mean, we all know that Les is very good at pronunciation. He's the... You know, he's the George Denikin of sport, and he went to Ed Cavalier.
Oh, nice!
So I think we might make that one.
You
stick.
Should get Les to do the voiceover for all of you. Actually, does he get Santo Chilaro right? Too?
He does. Always gets it right. Yeah. But I've shared a few Moselles with Les. Passively smoked with him. He's done a few things for us.
Moselle's, I had him pegged as a fruity Lexia man. You've shattered my illusions there.
He loves his Moselle. And he also, no. The ashtray, leave the ashtray. When you sit with Les, you always hear that expression.
So let's turn to the serious business of the Soccer World Cup. I noticed, in fact, Pim Verbeek got a bit cross when the media kept being obsessed about Harry Kewell. And he says, you know, there's a whole lot of other people playing in the Australian team too. Are we too Harry Kewell-centric? Are we Kewell-obsessed?
Possibly. I mean, he's a great face for the game and all that kind of stuff. And he's very marketable. And he's a lovely guy. And I can understand why people gravitate towards him. Although I do think he is important to the team. And with him out and possibly out for a couple of games, I don't want to be alarmist or anything, but it's looking slightly... it's looking a little bit depressing. Whether he'll play.
No Kewell, no Australia.
Well, no Kewell. I mean, we can still fill in for him, but it leaves a massive hole in our forward line at the moment.
Denmark.
Yeah. Well, did you see the game?
No. It wasn't the highlights.
Wasn't that great? Was there highlights? Was there? It's a surprise. As of yesterday, before Pim did the cull, we officially had more goalkeepers than we had strikers in the squad. So I think it may be a bit of a worry if Harry isn't fit. The key man will be Timmy Cahill, because if he can have a good World Cup, then really we can really, really go places. To me, the keys are Timmy Cahill and Mark Schwarzer. He had a great World Cup last time, I thought, and he really kept a lot of the teams out, and he kept us in.
Schwarzer here, the goalkeeper, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Italy won a World Cup basically 4 years ago because of Cannavaro and Gianluigi Buffon, who were the goalkeeper and defender. Now, if Schwarzer can play well, and a couple of our defenders, Lucas Neal, Vincenzo Grella, if they can do well, and we've got a target up front, maybe Josh Kennedy is the man, I reckon we could go pretty close.
To winning
the World Cup.
What, the actual World Cup?
No, let's go for it.
Oh,
right.
Come
okay.
on.
No, John,
in
honestly.
Your
dreams. No. Just don't do that. Don't say that. No, really.
Because you're talking out your own book,
Santo. No, John, one of the great attributes of us, don't laugh, Mike, you just go on red in the face like Eddie Maguire. Now, this is what happens. The reason Australia got so far last time is as of pure naivety. We didn't know when to stop. Most teams put ceilings on themselves. They just realise, well, we'll probably get this far. We're that naive and call us stupid or whatever that you go, no.
We're just blundering our way through history.
Just keep walking.
Excellent.
Just keep walking. I reckon we could walk all the way to the top. Yeah. You're looking at me with those
expressions. I'm so
convinced. Guys.
I'm interested,
You're
though. You're
so
going
on
the Wii. Is this show, does it come from a kind of patriotic spot? Are all three of you pushing for the Australians to win, or do you secretly have other...
We want to see a great World Cup. I mean, and some of the African nations we particularly love. I think we'll be wearing the green and gold glasses as often as we can. We want to see the world through those kind of... through those coloured glasses. I don't think we'll be going for the all-whites. The all-whites is possibly the team we won't be going for.
The all-whites being New Zealand,
being New
for people
Zealand.
Who are wondering.
Although they were good the other night, if anyone saw that game. They're okay. And we treated them very badly. We treated them.
We chopped them up.
We chopped them up, and that shouldn't have happened.
No, it was appalling, actually. It was a kind of revenge for the underarm cricket incident.
Do you think it was? Yeah. I don't think that much thought went into it. No. I've been going to friendly games since I was knee high to anything, and
they should remain friendly.
And we don't really know how to do a friendly game very well.
No, it was nasty.
No, it was.
And New Zealand's got every reason to be even more cross with us than they were just over cricket.
Mm. They can add it to the list.
They do. They bear a grudge, and so they should.
But the thing about it is, I think the reason we all love it is not really for the teams and who's going to win. It really is a very beautiful competition. There are 32 teams. There's one winner and 31 losers. There's no second prize. All this runner-up stuff just doesn't happen in football. And it's so beautifully cruel. It's just the one little mistake just makes the entire difference. So that's what it's not cruelty, because there's no cruel. It's not being inflicted on. It's just a cruelness about the game, which makes it beautiful.
Speaking of cruelness, I feel for you. You're not going to be there. What happened this year? Or are you going to ring SBS next week and say, oh, by the way, I forgot?
No, it's too late for that now. But the thing is, I've been to the last three World Cups, so I can't believe how lucky I've been. But there is something about the ritual of waking up in the middle of the night that we've grown up with. And I really did miss that. It was great being in Germany in 2006, but I did miss being on the couch with my dad and, in the dressing gown and a slice of toast. There is something about your body clock every 4 years that you go...
And the neighbor's cat fighting on the roof next
door. All that stuff,
what's the time? Because it's South Africa, what time will we be watching it if we do get up in the wee hours?
In the first couple of weeks, we'll be seeing games as early as 9:30 p.m.
And then
at midnight,
that's
and then at 4. So that's manageable, yeah. But then
the evening games are 4 o'clock in the morning our time.
That's correct. So they're the games we'll be seeing after the first phase, when there are no more early games. There's no more 1:30 p.m. games in South Africa, so we won't be seeing the 9:30 p.m. games. Mm-hmm. And we'll be seeing them at midnight and at 4 o'clock, which is the real hours, that's what I'm hanging out for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. There'll be a lot of bleary-eyed people. It's a bit like when the Ashes series are on.
Yes.
People coming to work grumpy, bleary-eyed, and no one can quite work out why.
Again, that's part of the ritual. And I think if you do that for long enough, same with people who follow cricket, every 2 years, body clock starts going, hey, where's this overnight thing that I need to do?
Michael can volunteer for feeding duties and nappy changing in the
wee
hours.
No question, I'll just pace around, jigging.
How old's your baby?
10 weeks old, so lots of bouncing on the balls of the feet.
That's perfect.
You'll be seeing a lot of games then.
Oh, fantastic.
You'll be seeing lots. Thing.
And I understand you've got a man on the ground.
Tony Wilson. Tony Wilson will be Race Around the World fame. He'll be in South Africa for us, so we'll be Skyping him and taking stories that he will shoot. And again, Tony gets very nervous. Oh, what'll I do? What do you want me to do there? Who do you want me to follow? Anybody? I said, no, Tony, I was at a World Cup with you in 2006. Things happen to you. Things happen to us. Things happen all the time to people that go to World Cups. Just, if you bump into a Cuban barber, whatever, just whatever happens to your film.
Has he written Cuban barber down in his notepad now? Have you put that pressure on him?
He has to find a Cuban barber. Well, I've got text messages here. Lucas Neal is very important from a female viewer's point of view.
Yeah,
so don't underestimate that.
He's a good-looking boy and he's marketable, yes.
I'm surprised you didn't mention that. Clearly you've put your team together based on eye candy. I thought you'd be very sensitive to those needs.
Yeah, Lucas, I think he should get rid of he's got the little goatee happening.
Yeah.
If he got rid of that, then I'd be more inclined to.
Little tuft. Santo will be watching and enjoying, I'm sure. Santo, Sam and Ed Cavalli, Sam Pang and Santo Chilaro, our guest today. Michael Williams from the Wheeler Centre, my co-host, and Mike and Mel. Mike Finch and Mel Fife from Circus Oz joining us as our next guests in just a moment.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Michael Williams from the Wheeler Centre, Santo Chilaro. We're joined now by Mike and Mel. Mike Finch and Mel Fife. Mike's Artistic Director of Circus Oz. And hang on, have I got this right? Mel Fife is Operations Manager and Mike Finch is Artistic Director. Yeah, I have got it right.
That's the current
title. I'm his boss. No.
Yeah, Mel was the strong woman in the show right up to last year. And as everyone at Circus Oz does a bit of everything. So Mel, she already had administrative skills before she became our chief strongwoman.
And now she's even stronger.
Yeah, she actually had a photo taken yesterday. Was it at the tent?
At the tent,
At the tent, yeah. As lifting one of our tent workers, the biggest guy on the whole lot, she lifted him. And
Mel, will you go around and lift John now?
Do you want me to, John? How do you feel about that?
Actually, sorry, John, to dub you in like that.
It was very nicely done, I might say. I wasn't consulted about that.
I reckon if we really want to test Mel, I reckon come around to our place because we make the homemade tomato sauce. If you can get the lids off those jars, they are...
I can.
You can?
Yeah. Oh, so everyone asks me to take jars. Yeah, lids off jars.
It has to be
said. And move fridges.
Oh, yeah. No, I can see you'd be dobbed in for a lot of house moving stuff. It has to be said, I'm always excited to be in the room for the conversation. Now, to have Santo in here, it feels like I'm sharing a mic with a hero. Always good to be here with John. But someone whose job has the word strongwoman in it absolutely trumps all of that. It's fantastic. How do you get to strongwoman status?
Well, it's nothing I ever dreamed of. Well, you know. Of course, I dream of being a strong woman, but physically in a circus, it just kind of happened by accident. When I joined Circus Oz back in 98, I was an acrobat, and a dancer, and I couldn't really do much circus at all. And I just kind of discovered that I was strong, and I guess that's from growing up as a baby in a family of five, getting beaten up upon and defending myself. So
Mel's audition, I actually auditioned Mel, and she auditioned. It was no kidding. It was like the final scene from Flashdance. You know where she throws everything into that audition, running.
Come on, don't embarrass
me.
No,
I'm serious. She is embarrassed. I've told this story before, but she basically threw everything at the audition. She was tumbling and dancing, and she ended up on the floor panting like this. She'd given everything, and we were like, we don't care whether you've got circus skills or not. You should be in the show. So, it was a legendary audition.
Then just over the years, they've piled more and more people on top of me.
We put our truck driver on, and last year
in the show, they put half a ton of people on me. So,
but what happens now? Do you just let yourself go? What happens?
Well, do
you run a pub like an old footballer, or what happens?
I'd love to run a pub. That's my dream. I've been taking a break, put it that way, but not for good. As you get older, you got to do more exercise, not less. Mm. So I've just taken a break and I'm ready to go back to some form of exercise. I don't know what that is. I'm considering roller derby and I'm never going to leave circus. Yeah. That's my heart. That's my passion. And I still want to perform. I just need to take a break from touring. Touring as a strong woman in a circus for 10 years is exhausting.
Circus Oz, it seems a bit like a cult.
Looks worse than that.
Is that another name for a family? It's a big family.
They are beautiful saffron robes you're both wearing.
And the little symbols too, yeah. But it seems to have that kind of grip. You said, I'll never leave. It's got that attraction to it.
Mm.
It's probably more like a family. I mean, yeah, cult, you could definitely say there's some odd stuff goes on, but it is like a family.
People marry into it, though. Your guts out, and you don't hang around in that kind of environment unless you really love it. You know, it's in you.
Mike, I have to say, artistic director is a pretty lame title compared to
strong woman for 10 years. Yeah.
You say that everyone has to take on a number of roles. Do you have circus skills as well? Is everyone involved with the place circusy?
Not everyone does, but by the time you've spent a few years there, people usually develop one or two other major areas. I actually started as an acrobat and a juggler, and I was in another company called Circus Monoxide. We were eight of us living in a double decker bus, and we had a show that folded off the side of the bus.
I've seen the sitcom based on that.
Yeah, so. Like a horror movie, but no, it was great. And but I started as an acrobat and a juggler, and sort of comedian, falling over type comedian, and then ended up as the artistic director 12 years ago now.
12 years ago,
yeah. So it's a bit, and it was and it's sort of gone really fast. But people develop other things. So like Mel arrived as a dancer with some circus skills, and she ends up as the strong woman, and you know ended up actually being the senior performer in the show and actually taking on a bit of a leadership role, and people in the office go out and then they learn hula hoops, and our rigger, who was originally a rock climber, ended up being a clown in the show. Mm-hmm. And essentially, like, he was this sort of silent clown who'd wander through the show and did a whole lot of stuff. So people sort of they develop. It's like putting ingredients in a big soup, you know, one of those big European soups, and you keep adding stuff to it. But
creating a culture of innovation and where people are prepared to take risks for a performing troupe, and one that requires, you know, bums on seats at the same time and the discipline of cash flow, it's not an easy thing to balance to strike, is it?
Well, that's actually the main challenge we have, because when people go particularly to Circus Oz, they expect to see sort of spontaneity and fun, and people sort of, it looks like it's all just been thrown together. It's really chaotic. But the other side of it is that people are risking spinal injury, you know, and it's really serious. There's people hanging upside down 10 metres in the air, and Like, we had half a ton of people on Mel last season. So to find that balance. She looks far from crushed.
A bit shorter now. Yeah.
And so finding that balance is sort of essential, and the type of person who can learn how to do a double somersault, and it requires this sort of repetitive, it's almost robotic, you know, discipline. But at the same time, you want someone who's the opposite of a robot, who can, like, take a little, some kid giggles in a silent moment and they can run with a bit of spontaneity. So the whole thing is full of those dichotomies. It's really, that's what I find endlessly fascinating.
That's the bits that my kids love are just the off-the-cuff stuff.
Yeah, right.
It really is fun.
Keeping it fresh every night is really important, not just for the audience, for us.
Yeah.
Like, and Circus Oz Mike gives us that kind of, it lets us off the leash to run with stuff like that, which is what's great about Circus Oz. We have a lot of artistic freedom out there on stage, and it doesn't matter if it doesn't work. We're allowed to take risks out there live on stage. That's awesome to be a part of that as a performer.
It must be extraordinary, though. Circus Oz has such a history now. You must have people bringing their kids along who came as kids themselves to Circus Oz.
Oh, yeah. We actually... We're in Newcastle doing a show. It's a beautiful theatre in Newcastle. It's a big old theatre anyway. And a family was there, and it was like a grandparent, a couple of parents, and a couple of kids, and they were all wearing Circus Oz T-shirts of all different eras. You know, like right back into the early 80s. And I was like, where are you? And they're like, we are fans. We've brought everyone. You know, they'd been coming since 1980, I think, and they bought each of the versions. And some of the T-shirts were all frayed, but they'd worn them on that day when they turned up. So that sort of stuff happens to us all the time now. It's sort of scary, really. It makes us feel
institutional. No, it's not scary. It's honourable.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it's great. Absolutely. It is great.
But it's not as if you've become mainstream. I mean, Cirque du Soleil is mainstream compared. You're still fringe, aren't you?
Well, we fought that off. I mean, it's sort of an ongoing challenge to sort of corporatise and expand and clone. And, you know, there's always people saying, oh, you should make a sort of best of show that can be touring the world constantly. Well, and we've always hung on to this idea of one ensemble of 12 performers, you know, a couple of technicians, and that's it. That's the core of the company. And you're either in that group or you're working around the edges of it.
We don't have any understudies. If one of us is injured or sick, the show just changes, you know. So that's, you can't really sustain that. Yeah.
What do your parents think of you being a strong woman, Mel? Running away with the circus.
Look, I'm originally from Perth. And
that's all right, you don't have to.
I ran away from Perth to join the circus. And it actually took my family a number of years to get used to the idea. They just thought, I don't think they could believe I could make a career out of it, really.
What did they say to you?
I'm picturing your parents as a ringleader.
You know,
and
don't be stupid, come back home. No. I did dance and acrobatics as a very young kid. So Mum was always pushing me into the performing arts. And
she was hoping for the ballet, right?
Luckily, I loved it. But yeah. You know, she wanted me to be the skinny, long-legged dancer in Paris doing the can-can.
So what did they say? So. Did they actively try to stop you?
No, never. Well, they couldn't. I left.
She was too strong.
It's not every parent that wants to hear, oh, yeah, Mum at work today, they put, you know, this many people on
half
me.
A ton of people on top of me. And the truck driver.
I think Mum just thought I would grow out of it, you know, but instead I grew into it. I've just kept going, and, you know, she sees me have concrete smashed on my stomach and someone jumping on top of me on a bed of nails, and she just doesn't say very much at all.
That sounds like my mum with me. Same.
Yeah.
Now, Cheryl's a great supporter. She's a great supporter.
So she now is extremely proud and just doesn't say much when I do the dangerous stuff. Which is worse for a parent. You know, you want them to say something, don't you? When they don't say anything at all, you know they're freaking out.
Yeah, I've got used to it with mine. They've got no idea what I do. It's always good when they can't speak English. It's doing something, but we'll work
on television.
It one day. Yeah.
It's news.
You just lie to them.
Totally. It's very easy.
I am a little bit in awe. There's something about the kind of breadth of skills that Circus Oz people seem to bring to the table, whether it's just casually saying, oh yeah, I just juggle a bit or something like that. I respect it. John, Sandra, do either of you even juggle?
I can juggle three balls. That's what I can do.
Yeah. I learned to juggle. At uni, everyone had to learn to juggle.
I can do a magic trick with a coin, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, look, it's part of what we do.
Oh, hang on.
Where is that coin now?
Here we go.
Hang on, I'll have to find the coin.
Oh, my God.
It's good for radio.
That's the definition of good radio.
This is great for
radio. It's gone.
Actually, you'd make a good bearded man.
Thank you.
In fact, I'm the only non-bearded person in this.
Hello.
Sorry. I said non-bearded. Sorry.
You said what
I
you
shouldn't
said.
Have said that. I said that. We can rewind the tape, can't we, John?
Yeah, and you'd rather we didn't, actually.
So looking forward to live TV there,
Sam. People do have that stereotype, though. If you're a strong woman, you must have a beard. Yeah,
no. Mel doesn't have a beard, everybody.
But she is currently holding a truck.
Just for the record. Now, look, you've just been given a government grant to establish permanent digs in Collingwood. How far down the process of having a home is Circus Oz?
Well, we do have a home in Port Melbourne, and the City of Port Phillip have been fantastic. And it's the only problem is it's just too small for us. And it's heritage listed, and we basically have to open the side doors and the crash doors and go out on the street to get run-ups. You know, so we're stuck, and the ceiling's too low and all this stuff. And
it's not grungy enough. Port Melbourne's gone too yuppie for
you
anyway, hasn't it?
We've preserved a fair bit of grunge. Yeah. You know, we've got pigeon droppings problems.
I thought it was the grunge factor. You had to move and look for something grungier in Collingwood.
They can't touch our grunge. It's heritage listed.
We're sort of hoping to move a bit further from Wayne Carey, but we'll...
You literally have to open the door for run-ups?
Well, for some acts, yeah. I mean, we're actually on the building line on both sides of our training space, so
you look
we
shocked.
Often have
That's
crash
fantastic.
Mats, or we put crash mats against the windows so that people don't smash the windows and end up on Bay Street. And
so where are you
no
going?
Soundproofing. So we're going to the old Collingwood TAFE site directly behind the Tote. I don't know if people know of the Tote, but they...
Johnson Street, Wellington Street.
It's been derelict for 10 years. So it's an amazing site. It takes us back next to the Last Laugh where Circus Oz started down there on Smith Street.
Not quite next to, but down the road from. How much space of that large site, how much of it's yours?
Well, at the moment they've earmarked the whole site and we're looking at, there's one L-shaped building on the corner which we probably, it'll be redeveloped and that'll help pay for the site. But we're basically looking at the whole thing from Johnson Street through to Perry Street. There's a big, beautiful Art Deco building on Johnson Street, three stories. It'll be offices and workshops and costume making. And then we'll build at least two big circus spaces behind in the centre of the block.
Between Wellington and Smith and Perry and Johnson, it's going to be circus headquarters.
Yeah, and we love that it adjoins the Tote. I mean, hopefully the Tote will be up and running again soon. And so there'll be live music there. You know, that's a real synergy. There's the Neighbourhood Justice Centre on that corner, which is...
The Curry Court, about,
Yeah, which is a really innovative way to deal with, justice. And we do a lot of stuff with our workshops with, you know, underprivileged kids and youth at risk. And all that stuff works really well with circus.
And the magistrate's juggling things pretty much every day.
Yeah, constantly. So that's really exciting for us. We're probably still 2 years away from even setting foot on the site in a formal way, but... we're going to start all the engineering and architecture work.
But it's a really interesting thing because the dynamic comes, and Michael, this is exactly what's happened with the Wheeler Centre and the library. You look at the Abbotsford Convent, and the more infrastructure and the more organisations can make their headquarters there, the more likely that is to develop a critical mass. And likewise with this derelict site, it's sitting there, it's full of junkies and squatters and all this sort of stuff, and instead it's going to become a circus arts and performing arts headquarters. It's fabulous.
Yeah, we're actively, it's actually about five times the size of our current space in Port Melbourne, and we've been so constrained. It's like when you just can't even imagine the future with extra opportunity because you're just constrained by space. We want to bring in other artists, costume makers, designers, riggers,
coffee
physiotherapists,
shops, focaccia toasters.
You guys are going to sell out. Come on, you guys are going to turn into...
No, we want to hold on. We really want to make it the centre of it. We'll probably be some sort of green room cafe, but what we want is for all the physical performing artists when they come to Melbourne to drop in there and see what's going on, and there'll be massage therapist there and physiotherapist, osteo.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. What about, will you still be doing the kids stuff? My kids did the circus course there at Port Melbourne. It's fantastic. So you still be doing that?
It's actually a huge part of it is to expand those programs so that we can run them year round. And so there'll always be after school circus going on there. And it's for us, it's actually about creating those edges. It's permaculture, really, about finding the diversity so that the professional circus performers are rubbing shoulders with the kids who are rubbing shoulders with international guests. And same with there's the whole community there in the flats there down in Collingwood and the Smith Street weirdos. You know, like we actually want all of that to cross over and that's a huge part of the vision. So, yeah, we're looking for some chaos up there.
Have you ever been to, I think it's called Granville Island in Vancouver?
No, never.
It's a former, right in the middle of Vancouver, and it's a former port area that was redeveloped, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. And there's a College of the Creative Arts, so, you know, glass making, pottery, all these sort of things. And there's a big old space that's been converted there, and there's all the old sheds have been turned over. There are people restoring wooden boats or hand-making shoes or making jewellery or whatever it might be, artisans, and there's subsidised space available, as well as a market, a fruit and produce market, as well as other things that bring tourists in. And it just creates this fantastic environment, this fabulous space that's part of the beating heart of a city like Vancouver.
Well, it's exactly that. What we want, except, you know, the centre of it will be sort of physical theatre and circus and performance.
Can I have my own football team?
Probably can. We could probably rustle one up.
I think Collingwood may have one. You know, I'm just
they're not very active.
Someone
else has got it.
So the new show starts on the 16th of June. Yeah. For the people who strap in every year and come to new circus old shows, what surprises?
This is what's really exciting. It's we've had to hire six people to fill Mel's shoes because she's just finished. But we've actually got six brand new performers, and we headhunt from all around the world. So we've got. They're Australians, but they're people who've ended up in different places. In fact, last year I went to New Zealand and brought two Aussies back from New Zealand.
Controversial.
It was a big poaching move. But we've got someone who juggles with their feet.
It's like Israel Folau changing codes.
I saw that cartoon today. Now it explains that. I didn't understand it till then.
Someone who juggles with their feet and yet they're not busy headed over to South Africa. That seems like a bit of a waste.
Is that a segue there?
That was a link between the two guests.
Well, Hazel, I don't know if she plays soccer, but she would be awesome. She can juggle five basketballs with her hands and her feet simultaneously. She lies on her back and juggles. She's an amazing juggler. And we've got a really hot acrobat who is half New Zealand. He was originally a fruit fly from the Albury. An Amazon sort of trapeze artist who can, you know, lift a lot of people.
Fire eater?
We don't have. We've got a really, really hilarious magician who sets fire to himself. He sets fire to his pants, actually.
Good.
Human so cannonball.
We don't have the human cannonball.
I know people of that caliber. They're hard to find.
John! My God, it's Dad Pun Fest in here. But do you have someone who can make a coin disappear?
We do. We have. We've called him Magic Hammond, the name of his character, because of his theme music.
Don't give up your day job, Michael.
He disappears a guy in a wheelchair, and he reappears on top of a palm tree.
That's better than my coin trick.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Mel Fife, who is a former strong person, operations manager, still strong, and no beard with Circus Oz. Mike Finch, artistic director, Santo Chilaro with the Santo Broadcasting Service, SBS's new Cup Fever, Santo Sam and Ed's Cup Fever. They've been our guests on The Conversation Hour today. Thank you all for coming. This has been The Conversation Hour on 774 ABC Melbourne.
The Conversation Hour podcasts are available at abc.net.au/Melbourne. Subscribe now and you'll receive automatic updates with special guests, interesting interviews. It's a bit of fun. You'll be mad not to subscribe. abc.net.au/Melbourne.